You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Many consider Shalom Aleichem to be the foremost Yiddish language writer of all time, but he's mostly known today as the creator of Tevye the Dairyman, who was later adapted as the protagonist of Fiddler on the Roof. Aleichem lived in a time, the late 19th and early 20th centuries, when the Jewish communities of Eastern Europe were migrating from small villages into the cities, and his writings reflected their struggles to adapt to their rapidly changing cultural and industrial environments while holding on to their sense of Jewish identity. In a new documentary called Shalom Aleichem, Laughing in the Darkness, Joseph Dorman takes a look at the writer's life and the forces that inspired his work. It opens today at the Lincoln Plaza Cinema, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Mr. Dorman back to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
He's been called the Jewish Mark Twain. Is that a fair comparison?
I think it is in a certain way. It's a fair comparison in the sense that as 19th century authors, they were both faced with, in many ways, as other 19th century authors were, reaching an audience that in many ways was not an educated audience. They weren't illiterate because they were reading, but they weren't educated. So they had to – one of their struggles was as men who were essentially believed in high art – and Shalom Aleichem's goal was to, in fact, create a high art in Yiddish where it hadn't existed before, but they had to, at the same time, reach this audience. So what they both did was, and I'm not as aware, obviously, of Mark Twain as Shalom Aleichem, but by creating personas for themselves.
Inventing names.
Inventing names and a kind of folksy kind of persona, it allowed them to bridge this gap between themselves and their audiences.
His first name remains the same, Shalom.
Right.
Shalom Rabinowitz. Shalom Aleichem means...
Means peace be upon you.
It's the same as Salam Aleichem in Arabic.
Exactly. And became a common Jewish greeting.
And was it odd that somebody would take on the name of a hello?
Yeah. At that time, because Yiddish was not was looked down on as a literary language, everyone was taking on nicknames. So in that sense, it wasn't. I don't know how it was initially responded to, but I bet it was... It's like Howdy Doody or something. It probably struck a nice note with his audience. It's clearly the one that stuck. He had tried other ones before that.
Could he have written in Russian?
He could have written in Russian. He was fluent in Russian.
And he would have had a much wider audience.
He would have had a much wider audience, but, the thing was that even though he was completely fluent in Russian, he lived his life in Russian as an adult, his genius only expressed itself in Yiddish. And I think what he tried writing in Hebrew first as well, because Hebrew was considered among Jews the literary language. He did some Russian writing, I think. But it was only when he started to work with Yiddish that all of a sudden the expressiveness, the brilliance of what he could do really came out.
And he opened the doors for others, people like I.B. Singer, in fact, all the Singer family who are writers. It's kind of ended today, hasn't it, with I.B.?
I think that... As a literary language, Yiddish is, for all intents and purposes, gone. It's not a common language except among Hasidic Jews now, and Hasidic Jews are not people who write novels or read novels. So in that sense, when the language died as a common language, I think there may still be a few people out there writing, elderly people writing it, maybe even some younger people who have tried, but it's for all intents and purposes gone.
Did he grow up in the shtetl?
He did. He grew up in a shtetl. His father was, in fact, a wealthy man who lost – not a wealthy man, but a well-off man, a merchant who unfortunately lost his money. He was swindled by his partner, so he fell into poverty. But he was a man who – he was a product of shtetl life. And, in fact, his great mythic shtetl, Kizrilovka, is based on Voronko, the shtetl of his youth.
Were the Jewish peasant communities totally separate from the Christian peasant communities?
They were. Well,
this is Ukraine, right? Although it would be called Russia at the time because it was under the Tsar?
Exactly. It was part of what was then known as the Pale of Settlement, which included Ukraine, Lithuania, Latvia, Belarus, this whole section, the western end of the Russian Empire that had been at one point grabbed from Poland in a war, and which included all these Jews that the Russians didn't know what to do with. The interesting thing was Jews were both separated and not separated. I mean, Jews, in fact, weren't peasants. Poles or the Ukrainians who lived on the land. Jews tended to be petty craftsmen, shopkeepers. So they were selling and buying from their Ukrainian neighbors or their Polish neighbors.
Although in the case of Tevye, he's a farmer. He's a dairyman.
He's a dairyman. Well, Tevye is an interesting case because even though in Fiddler on the Roof he's painted as being in a shtetl, he was actually a village Jew. So he's really one of the few, maybe lone Jew in his village. And right, he is a dairyman. He's not a shopkeeper. But again, he's not someone who works the land as such.
I was thinking of China today in thinking about this story because we're seeing all these people who are moving from the interior to the big cities. And it is disrupting life in the country. We're going through a transitionary period. The same sort of thing happened in Poland, in Ukraine, in Russia. At this time, the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th.
Yeah, well, I think that's a fantastic point, actually. I think it's quite an acute point. And I think that as Jewish a writer as Shlomo Aleichem is, in fact, what makes him a great writer is that this is a universal theme. It's the theme that has been happening since before Shlomo Aleichem and continues even to the present day, this transition of people all over the world from this traditional environment to this modern industrial environment and the disorientation and identity that results from it.
But he also was growing up in an environment that was anti-Semitic. There were pogroms. Later, not that much later, during his lifetime, you get the Russian secret police, the Tsarist secret police, writing the protocols of the Elders of Zion. Mm-hmm. Was he able to get a decent education?
He was. You know, I should say just it's so interesting that you brought up China because I was just at the Shlomo Aleichem yard site, the annual memorial for him, where they read stories and laugh. And at that yard site were five Chinese men who have started a Shlomo Aleichem center in China. So perhaps for the very reason you're talking about, the Chinese are becoming more and more interested in Shlomo Aleichem, as the Japanese and other people have. He did have trouble getting an education. He had a traditional Heder education. He did go to a gymnasium, a high school, but there were quotas on Jews for colleges, for Russian universities. So he was never able to get anything past a high school education.
But you mentioned the Haskalah, the Jewish Enlightenment, in your film. Mm. That was an important moment for him. It affected his education?
It did. Well, it affected his education because it affected his father. The Haskalah, the Jewish Enlightenment, which was the first great modern movement among Jews to reach out beyond traditionally religious subjects to secular, infused his father, and his father therefore wanted his son not just to have a religious, but he wanted him to have a secular education. So he learned and read in the greats in Russian culture.
And then he moved to Kiev. And is that where he started publishing?
He was starting as a young man after he finished high school. He had to go out and make a living. And he hires himself out as a tutor, where he tutors the young woman who will become his wife. And it's around that time that he first starts to do his writing and then had a couple of years in another small town. But it's in Kiev, really, where his career takes off.
Well, his characters often long to be rich, and I suspect that grew out of his own feelings. Never really made it big as a writer, did he? Was he able to live off of his writing, or did he have to do other things? I mean, he worked as a stockbroker for a while, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Well, what happened was he had inherited his wealthy father-in-law's money. And was very excited to all of a sudden have this cash on hand, and he speculated on the stock market. And so here he was, this wealthy guy, during the day speculating along with other Russian businessmen, other assimilated Jewish Russian businessmen, and at night he was writing Yiddish. But he was speculating in large part, partly I think he just enjoyed it and liked the idea of gaining more wealth, but he was also funneling that money into his great project at that point, which was Yiddish literature.
Well, one of his characters, Menachem Mendel, loses his money.
He does.
On stock speculation. Does Shlomo Aleichem lose his money as well?
Shlomo Aleichem lost everything. He lost everything, and Menachem Mendel was in part a fictional self-portrait of him, although Menachem Mendel is not quite as smart as Shlomo Aleichem. But Shlomo Aleichem lost all his money, and it was essentially his wife's family's money, and his mother-in-law, who was living with him at the time, had to bail him out with the little riches the family had left, which was in the form of her jewels, and she never spoke to him again for as long as they lived together, which was for the rest of her life.
My guest is Joseph Dorman, who's directed a film called Shalom Aleichem, Laughing in the Darkness, which opens today at the Lincoln Plaza Cinema. Well, but he was kind of famous in his time, wasn't
very
he?
Oh, he was the most famous
so
Jewish writer.
So would she have been proud of him?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on whether your pride is in the fact that he, you know, pens a few letters or whether or stories or whether he makes money. I think she never, you know, this was her husband's hard-earned money, so I think she held a grudge, and people can. The problem with Shalom Aleichem was as successful as his stories were, and they were wildly, wildly successful. He reached people through the press. This was in a day when copyright laws were not respected, so people were publishing his stories even though they didn't have the right to them. He also very cavalierly often sold off the rights to his work. So even though his stories were selling, he wasn't making the money from them.
Yiddish is one of those languages that crosses national boundaries. Hmm. He didn't have to be translated unless people who didn't speak the language wanted to read the stories. Mm. Was he published in the United States at the time?
Absolutely. He was published in the United States and loved by the American Jewish community and adored by them. Absolutely.
And when was he – when did they start translating him?
I think – you know, I think there were – in his time period already, there were beginning to be Hebrew translations his son-in-law was doing. I don't know when the first Russian translations took place, but obviously the English translations really start taking place as the Yiddish reading audience was dying out, and that's really starting in the post-war era.
There's a wonderful Romanian writer named Norman Mania who has lived in exile, and I guess that's the way you might describe it. Anyway, he's lived in this country for many years, but he says the Romanian language is his nation. And in the documentary, someone refers to Yiddish as a protective shield, a portable homeland.
Yeah. It was for Jews. You know, some people have coined the phrase Yiddish land. Because Jews were scattered throughout the Pale and even into America, what did keep them together, what bound them aside from the religion, and of course at this point people were becoming less religious, was the language.
Now, he was writing in a time of great literary ferment in Russia. There were giants like Tolstoy and Dostoevsky writing at the time. Was he aware of them? Was he influenced by them?
He was aware of them, and in fact, he had a correspondence with both Chekhov and Tolstoy.
Chekhov as well. Well, he's more Chekhovian, I would think.
Yeah, he is more Chekhovian. He was very much aware of them and admired their writing and was influenced by their writing, and I think they were as well aware of him.
And did he live in Kiev all of his life?
He bounced around. He lived predominantly in Kiev. At one point, he moved down to Odessa, which was another fascinating cosmopolitan Jewish city. Then he ultimately ended up, he came to America for a brief couple of years, then moved back to Europe. At that point, he finally left Kiev in 1905 because of a pogrom. And after that pogrom, he was never really settled in one place. He was moving constantly from place to place and also was sick. He had TB and other things. So he was also going to places for cures.
Did he ever believe that assimilation could work?
He did, you know, he was, like so many people, of two minds about it. He both was a great admirer of America because he saw that it was a salvation for the Jews from all the violence in Russia. And in fact, at one point referred to it as a God-given land for Jews. But at the same time, he never really personally took to America. He was an older man. He thought in many ways that American culture was destroying Jewish culture because of assimilation. So you see in some of his stories some very sharp critiques of this. But in one of his final great novel, Motel the Cantor's Son, even though he himself was having so much difficulties and had so much questions about this, he was able to paint the portrait of this young boy who he saw was going to become an American Jew and did it with great generosity.
Did he live to see the Soviet Revolution?
He didn't. He died in 1916. I mean, he would have seen the first one, but he did not live to see that.
And what was the official position on his writing by the Soviet government?
Interestingly, they embraced him because he was considered a, as one person in the film, Don Miron, describes it, as a democratic writer. He was bourgeois, but his face was pointing in the right direction, as he describes it. And Soviet culture initially embraced Yiddish culture very, very strongly. They were enormously anti-religious, as you know, but they wanted to embrace these national cultures. So Yiddish really flourished for a couple of decades in a way in no other place in the world as it did in the Soviet Union.
And then Stalin pretty much instituted anti-Semitic measures.
Exactly.
And what about in Israel or in pre-Israel where Yiddish was being rejected because Hebrew was being embraced and Yiddish was seen as the old stuff?
Right. Well, what happens is, Israel essentially rejects shtetl culture and Yiddish and decides to speak Hebrew and is very strong about that, has laws about that. So he gets – there are obviously advocates, but he gets pushed to the side. In many ways, what happened was he becomes a children's author there. He gets marginalized in Israel just as he does in other places.
And as he does here, where most people just simply associate him with Fiddler on the Roof.
That's right. I mean, it's – you know, in the early days he was lionized, and the Forwards and some of these other newspapers would, as an inducement for a subscription, hand out free completed works of Shlomo Aleichem. But as time went on and the Yiddish-speaking audience started to die out, I think what happened was American Jewry lost contact with this world.
If you were to recommend a book, obviously in translation, what would you say people should start with?
I think, for me, the best translation and the best sort of composite is there are two very good translators, I should say, today of Shlomo Aleichem. One is Aliza Shevren, and the other is Hillel Halkin. Hillel Halkin happens to be in my film. I think either of their translations of Tevye the Dairyman are great. My maybe particular favorite is Hillel Halkin's, and it's a compilation of Tevye the Dairyman and also these late stories called the Railway Stories, which really are Chekhovian and present a different aspect of him. And it's a great way to see the breadth of his oeuvre.
Joseph Dorman's film, Shalom Aleichem, Laughing in the Darkness, opens today at the Lincoln Plaza Cinema. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.